Vrindavan Mahimamrita. This is Vrindavan Mahimamrita. We're discussing a section, many verses in this book. Prabodhananda Saraswati wants to establish the unique position of Vrindavan Dham by comparing Vrindavan and contrasting Vrindavan with Vaikuntha. The gopis of Vrindavan versus the lakshmis of Vrindavan, the mellows of Vrindavan versus the mellows of Vaikuntha. There's quite a few verses we collected here. The comparable position of Vaikuntha Lakshmis and the Braja Gopis, that's what we called it. It's our 19th section of discussion. We discussed a lot of things, actually, from this book. Ultimately, we'll cover the whole book in a roundabout way. I'll just review some of the points. Just for to remember. The first section was Nam, Rup, Gun, and Leela, the glories of Vrindavan, the name of Vrindavan, and then the great glories of Vrindavan, and the Brijvasis, what is their identity, and from the worms to the trees to the devotees. And then this was a Vrindavan Mahima Sangraha, a collection of Vrindavan's glories that was discussing about offenders also. Someone offends the devotees of the Dham, what happens to them. We've forgotten all these things, I'm sure. The nature of the Kali is like that. We can hear any class, good, or whatever. It can be a wonderful class, and a week later, we don't remember it. So it doesn't matter whether it's a wonderful class or an average class. All classes are forgotten. It makes a nice, but the impression is what stays. You know, the good class makes a better impression that kind of sweeps away a lot of illusions and doubts. So that obviously there's a relative importance of different types of classes. Braja Raja Mahima, the glories of the dust of Vrindavan. Braja Trina Pranam, obeisances to the grass of Vrindavan. And Braja Trina Janam Bhavatu, the glories of taking birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan. And then the glories of the the creepers of Vrindavan Dham. We had a whole section describing the latas and creepers. And then describing the brikshas, the glories of the Vrindavan trees. Then the glories of the birds of Vrindavan. Because he writes so many verses. And then I think we touched about glories of Maya in Vrindavan. How Maya is also in Vrindavan. But we should transcend that Maya and be with Krishna. Then the Surabhi, glories of the Surabhi cows of Vrindavan. The enchantment of the love land of play. That was section 15. Then the Braja Bhajan means Raganuga Bhakti. Then the Braja Sakhi Mahima, the glories of the Sakhis of Vrindavan. Then the Palyadasi Mahima, the glories of Radharani's Mantri, maidservants. And now the comparable position of Vaikuntha Lakshmis and Braja Gopis. And there's some of the upcoming Mahimas are Radhanam Mahima and Radha's Mahima. So we're working our way up to the ultimate glory of Vrindavan, the ultimate glorious Kirtida Sutta. The most glorious daughter of Kirtida, Srimati Radharani, who never leaves Vrindavan. There's some yogini and viyogini that feel separation and also range. Some yogini is that aspect of Radharani feeling union with Krishna. Even in Kurukshetra, she experiences union with Krishna in some yogini form. She goes there in that aspect. We discussed that in our answer. So now let's continue with this. This is chapter 11, verse 98. There's no interest in Ishvara Vaikuntha. So the Brijvasis, they don't care too much about this Vaikuntha Ishwaras, the controllers. Controllers, I have a pen, is there a pen there? Yeah. 1198. Ati madurima sarasudha vrindavana rasa lalasya lalasa manasasya nunam apina ruchir ruchika ishvaraya varta priyam anukulataya hi sabam matra. Persons who are greedy to attain the shelter, the most nectarine abode of Vrindavan, do not relish topics related even to the Supreme Lord of Vaikuntha. Because all animate and inanimate objects of Vrindavan are favorably engaged in the service of the divine couple. So the Brijvasi worshippers of Radha and Krishna, they would rather just be here in Vrindavan with the lowly creepers and trees and dogs and everyone in Vrindavan is serving Krishna. They're more interested just to be here amongst them and observe how they're serving in their own way, and they're all part of the divine pastimes. You read about Radharani showing her favor to a Shiv. Shiv. I always say, I always thought this Pushkarini, where the Shamsan ground is in Radhakund, I thought it was called Shiv Kori. It's actually Shiva. And Shiva, something like Shiva means jackal. And Vrijbhasi. In its different books they have about the Vrindavan, they call it Shiva Kori. But usually people say, oh, this is Shiv Kori, but it's Shiva and Shia. Whatever that is, but what is written in books is V. Not Shira, whatever your Hindi word is, but it's some other word, Shiva, Shiva. And they say that means jackal. So the pastime is there where Radharani was, you must have heard. So some boys were trying to, they trapped a jackal in the hole and they were trying to disturb him by burning wood at the opening of the hole, scaring and frightening the poor little jackal. So Radharani asked her Sakis to chase away those boys. And then the jackal came out and Radharani fed him some rotis or something. I don't know. But then she said, even a jackal, she told the jackal, she said, in my kingdom, you should not have any fear for your safety. And I'm Vrindavaneshwari. And this is the month that Vrindavaneshwari became Vrindavaneshwari in Magh Mas, such an auspicious month. So we're bathing every day in the month of Magh to celebrate Radharani's coronation. Because on Purnima and Umrao means queen or sovereign. And there's Chata and Umrao. Chata means the white umbrella that's carried over the head of the king, Chata. So Krishna was crowned as the king of Vrindavan in Chata. And right nearby is Umrao. Gown, and then the gopis, not to be outdone, they said, what is this nonsense? Krishna is the Vrindavan Nath. Krishna, he's the Lord, he's the Ishwar of Vrindavan. This is incorrect. Totally bogus proposal. Only because we weren't unaware of it, otherwise we would have struck it down and protested outside that event. So then all the devis in the whole universe, hardly anyone came to establish Krishna as a king in Chata. Just a handful of coward boys. Of course, in Govinda Kund, when Indra, of course, he gave him the name Govinda, and all the demigods came and worshipped Krishna at that time to show their gratitude for saving them from the wrath of Indra, because he's unpredictable. If he was frustrated in his attempts to destroy Vrindavan, then he may destroy the universe. Some people are in that mode of self-destruct. If they can't destroy something else, they destroy themselves. So they were just worshipping Krishna along with Indra. So this on Purnima, Radharani was this described in Madhava Mahalsa. Maghi Purnima, Radharani was crowned Queen of Vrindavan. So this verse is telling that, this translation is saying that if you're greedy to live in Vrindavan, then you should not be interested in Aishwarya Katha, Aishwarya Hari Katha. It is all right, it is, but greed, lobha, brajavas lobha, the greed to live in Krishna's holy dham comes when one makes advancement in bhakti sadhana. In the beginning, we're just greedy. greedy to enjoy this world, and we have to undergo sadhana, cheta dharvana marjana, vaidhi sadhana. So then when the heart becomes purified, then we perform bhakti sadhana, we hear about Vrindavan, we may visit. But if someone says, would you like to live here? And the person will say, never. But as one advances in bhakti sadhana, proper association and proper application of the principles of devotion, he's actually practicing from the very beginning with an intense desire to attain love of God, bhava. Oftentimes, when people preach, they don't actually establish the sadhya in the beginning. They said, oh, use your chant, Hare Krishna, you'll be happy, you'll be peaceful, it's good for you. So many things they try to sell the market and sell the concept of bhakti sadhana, or chanting, especially nam-vajan, which is the basis. But really, how we were told is that, we were asked, what do you want, what is your goal in life, what do you want? And we just say, love, happiness. Yeah, this is the goal. This is the goal of Krishna consciousness, devotion, bhakti, bhava, prema. And then we were told in the beginning, everything we do should be full of, with that, invested with that desire for bhava. And this type of vaidhi sadhana quickly makes one advance, because he's hungry, he's thirsty, he's hankering. He's not just doing some sadhana, oh, this is good for me, I should do it. No, I want to attain this sadhya, love of God, and be with all these joyful, blissful people. So eventually, he loses interest. He reads the Bhagavatam, he reads so many books, and he becomes purified, and then it awakens a relish, a desire within his heart to live in the holy dham. He hears about the five most important factors of devotion, and he's engaging in them all wherever he lives. And he starts hankering deep in his heart to live in Vrindavan with Krishna's Brijvasis and to visit their places and remember their places of Krishna's Leelas. And this is a natural byproduct of advancement in bhakti. Detachment from the Janamstan, Bhoma Ijyadi. Bhoma Ijya means worshipable. We consider that our place of birth is worshipable, we become deeply, severely attached to it. And we can't even conceive, and we make up all kinds of excuses. Oh, I'm not Indian, I need a visa, and I have to come and go, and how will I ever live there, and the climate, and so many things can come up. But when one is actually advanced in bhakti, then he intensely desires of always reading about Vrindavan, hearing about Vrindavan, and living in Vrindavan. This verse is saying, for one who is greedy to attain the shelter of the abode of Vrindavan, then he's not interested in Aishwarya Katha. He's not interested so much anymore at this juncture of his devotional advancement to hear about Srishti, Leela, the creation, or the whole maintenance and arrangement of the material world through the various avatars and forms of the Lord. He becomes greedy to hear and chant about Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, and to live in their holy dham. I see from my own coming to Krishna consciousness and passing my life in sadhana bhakti and vaidhi sadhana and trying to enter into Raghunuga sadhana, how all of a sudden the awareness of Vrindavan comes very early, because you read Krishna book, it talks about a place named Vrindavan. And waterfalls and birds and everything's very attractive. Then you finally come here. And, of course, the physical Vrindavan that you see is not what you read about. What you see is not what you hear about. But it nevertheless, Vrindavan makes some deep impressions on the purified mind of a jiva. And then it becomes unforgettable. Many people can come and go and say, how did you like it? Oh yeah, it's nice. You go back, no. So he's saying here that they're not interested in topics because all the animate and inanimate objects of Vrindavan are favorably engaged in service of the divine young couple. This is this translation. We'll see another translation. Each one will take a different idea, and it'll be favorable because the translators are seeing it in a different way. And when you were discussing about Shastra and Rasa Shastra, and the basic essence of the tattva must be in place, but then the angle of vision or the understanding can vary in unlimited ways and shades. Look at these words. Vrindavan rasa lalasa manasasya nunam ati madurima sarashuda. Someone can break it down in so many different ways and explain in so many proper points according to the Siddhanta. Madurima sarashuda. This is the essence of nectar. This Vrindavan itself, just to live here, is the essence of nectar. And someone drinking the nectar of Vrajavas, he's appreciating, as he says here, that even the animate and inanimate objects of Vrindavan, he's actually seeing how they're all serving Krishna. This is a revelation. He's actually seeing the consciousness aspect of his environment. How everything in Vrindavan is full of consciousness, and every creature, movable or unmovable, trees, plants, lotus, squirrels, birds, dogs, pigs, they're all serving Krishna. And this, such a vision and such a realization is so far beyond Aishwarya Gata of creation. And that's, he understands that that's just by living here in Vrindavan. I want to live in Vrindavan, I want to hear more of Vrindavan and experience more of Vrindavan, going to Leela Stalis and hearing Gata and reading about the Leelas. And this is ultimately the highest experience of knowledge, is to appreciate the non-difference of Bhagavan and his holy Dham. This is a proof of realization of God. That one realizes that the Dham is worshipable, equally as worshipable as Krishna. Aradya Bhagavan Vrajeshatanyo Sri Dham Vrindavanam. The Aradya Dev, the worshipable Ishtadev, our Lord, is the Lord, Sakshat Hari, but also his Dham is also him. And all the Puranas, they try to help us understand that by various graphic examples. Padma Puran says these forests are Krishna's feet, and these forests are Krishna's heart, and the Yamuna is his backbone, or whatever. They have all different kinds. It almost sounds like Virata Roop description, but describing the 12 forests of Vrindavan or different parts of Krishna's body. That being said, then we can only understand what parts of Vrindavan are Radharani's form. So the Radhakund is, as the locals would like to present it, it's the very heart of Radharani. If you go to Varsana, they may have a different viewpoint. Just like we say that tongue of Giriraj is here in Radhakund, Jiva, Mandira. But then the Vallabhacharyas say the mouth of Govardhan is Yatipur. I think they call Mukharavinda Shila, some lotus mouth. Then we say, no, his mouth is not at Yatipur, it's at Manasi Ganga. Because we also say this Mukharavinda. So it's like Gita everywhere, or his face is in hands and eyes. Let's see another translation of this glories of Vrindavan. The main thing about living and hearing these glories about Vrindavan is the appreciation that one will develop and realizes, as I heard once from one great devotee, he said that when one advances in bhakti, he realizes that everything in Vrindavan is above him. Even a particle of dust is greater than he is as a jiva. Because he's the jiva, the sadhaka, coming from conditioned life, he's coming from this Bahiranga Shakti, this Tatastha Shakti. And so he is a mixture of so many things, of material energy and spiritual energy, atma and body. But the particles of dust in the holy dham, the kankan, they're all chinmaya shakti. They're totally chinmaya shakti. So even the, even, that's why in the, this person, Acharya, was saying that when we take a flower from Krishna's feet, we touch it to our forehead. Because this flower is in a higher position than I am. This flower is sitting on the feet of Krishna. So in Vrindavan, every particle of dust is sitting on the feet of Krishna. Mahaprabhu was realizing this in his Brajavab and Gambira, and he's praying like this, that all these particles of dust in Vrindavan are stuck on your feet. And that prayer alone, it shows the significance of a particle of dust at the feet of Nanda Nandan. Nanda Nandan's feet wander in Vrindavan. So they're full of kankan, bole, shira, ha-ha-ha. So we can appreciate that this particle of dust is greater than I am. It's worshipable with me. So is this flower. You take a particle of dust to Vrindavan, we put on our forehead. We put on our head, we worship the particles of dust. If that type of reverence and that type of vision comes, then how much reciprocation will come from the holy Dham? There's another translation here. The same verse, 1198. Oh, this is very interesting. For what? Here it says, persons who are greedy to attain the shelter of the most nectarine abode of Vrindavan do not relish topics related even to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Because this whole section is about the comparable position of Vaikuntha and Vrindavan. Why is it like that? Because all the animate and inanimate objects of Vrindavan are favorably engaged in the service of the divine young couple. So the whole idea of hearing Aishwarya Gata, or the grandeur and majesty and glories of Krishna's creation and maintenance and all these other aspects of the material world, are simply to bring one to the point of surrendering and serving the Lord who is great, the great majestic Lord, Vibhu, Chaitanya and Anu Chaitanya. Serve the Lord, but then ultimately as one's serving the Lord, then he appreciates Vrindavan and he appreciates the animate and inanimate entities in Vrindavan, and it goes to a higher level of actually entering the Nitya Vrindavan and serving in the Siddhadeya. But here it says, for one whose heart yearns to taste the sweet nectar of the most charming and splendid land of Vrindavan, does not everything remind him of the charming Lord? So we look at the Sanskrit, Ati Madhurima Saras Shudha. So the Shuddha's nectar, Madhurima is so sweet, excessively sweet nectar. The essence of excessively sweet nectar, Vrindavana rasa lalasa manasasyanunam varta priyam manukula. This sort of translation sounds, everyone has its own points, their own virtues. Because there's similarity, there can't not but be a similarity. But this one, we get the points here is that we want to taste the sweet nectar, this madhurima sara shuddha, then what do we have to do? Then we will taste it. For one whose heart who yearns to taste the sweet nectar of the most charming and splendid land of Vrindavan, does not everything in Vrindavan remind him of the charming Lord? Anukulya, varta priyam anukulya ta sarvamati. Everything is anukulya for his to remind him of the Supreme Lord, his taste, ruchi. He's taken it from this aspect. It's all about Vrindavan. That everything, the animate and inanimate, everything in Vrindavan actually increases his taste for his Lord. When you see a monkey, because you're a devotee, then you think, oh, Krishna used to feed these monkeys. And they used to help him in his exploits. so he would use them for his, in his games and in his sporting, they would engage in Krishna's service. So everything you see, usually we see, oh, that monkey is stealing my clothes. We have to go beyond the cover. Just like we see a conditioned soul, we go beyond the cover and see a potential devotee. If you just stay with the cover, so the cover of Vrindavan is the Maya cover. The Maya cover is that cover which prevents us from seeing the Leela. And the Maya cover prevents us from seeing the how everything and everyone in Vrindavan is an Udipan to remember Krishna's Leela. But if the Maya covering is there, we don't, oh, monkey, he ripped my clothes. Oh, pig is dirty. Oh, all these things. But you see the bungee sweeping the street, and you think, what do you think? Do you think of Jagannath Das Babaji and his intense appreciation for the Brijavasis? How that he took roti, I believe it was Jagannath Das Babaji. He saw the bungee and he thought, oh, what a great soul, what an exalted person. So when we see Vrindavan through the eyes of the great Mahajans that have lived here and done bhajan, and we see through the Shastras, then we can begin to appreciate how the synergy of everything and everyone in Vrindavan. And then our outlook towards the Brijavasis and from the Bungis to the Brahmins and everyone in between will be so much different. It will be based on the knowledge that we've acquired and the realization of that knowledge and then our actual application of it. Because we've seen here that there is one particular bungi that sweeps the street, kind of tall, lanky person. But I've always understood this idea of how exalted everyone is in Vrindavan. Because we are foreigners, we are traders on a foreign soil. Like the British may come to India to trade, and they're treading on foreign soil. They're traders on foreign soil. They're not natives here. They're not born here, but they come here to make get some profit, to exploit the nature and the production here, silk, gold, tea, coffee, etc. Fruit, nuts, so many things. People, labor, soldiers, everything, gold, they exploited so much. So when we come to Vrindavan, we're traders on foreign soil because we're not born here. Even the dogs are born here. So if you compare something, there's points of comparison and contrast to everywhere. So you say, okay, take a dog. Compare a dog to me. Am I better? In some regards, yes. Am I less fortunate? Yes. What is the fortune of the dog that's greater than mine? And a proud person can't see. Oh, dirty dog. He only sees like that. But then a broad-minded person who has some paravidya, transcendental knowledge, they'll see, oh, this is not a dog, this is a Vrindavan dog. This is not a sky, it's a Vrindavan sky. This is not a moon, it's a Vrindavan moon. This is Vrindavan Chandra. This is not a moon, it's the face of Radharani. You see the moon, I see the face of Radharani, says Krishna, and Rasa Purnima. I don't see it. For me, the moon is Udipan to remember my Chandramukhi Radha. For you, the moon is Udipan to remember your wife. Or those moonlit nights on the bank of the Revati, when God knows what you were doing with who knows who. That's a point of editing here. That's we have a very tight censor board here. Just as well. So this here he's saying that does not everything remind him of the charming Lord? Ati madurima sarasudha Vrindavana rasa lalasa manasasya nunam apina ruchi karishvariya varta priyam manukulataya I sarvam matra. Beautiful Sanskrit. To me, Sanskrit is like a jar of honey and I'm on the outside looking in. And unless you're gifted with good brain and lots of determination, some scars from your last life, it's very difficult to have familiarity with Sanskrit. So honesty is, we don't know, but we adore Sanskrit. And even from an unknowing position, but if one's an unknowing devotee, he can appreciate the beauty of such language. Madhurima Sara Shuddha. There's some phrase like that, one bhajan, isn't there? Krishna Deva Bhavanta. Madhurima Sara. Krishna Deva. This Madhurima. Madhurima. Yeah. Madhurima. Madhurima. That sweet Radha Krishna Gunasmriti, Madhurima. They're relishing. They're always relishing this, remembering the sweet gunas and leelas of Radha Krishna Gunasmriti, Madhurima, Nandena Samhoito. They became completely beside themselves. Memory can make you crazy. You remember someone of the material world that you were deeply emotionally attached to and involved with, you can go crazy by the memory. But you can the Goswamis remembering Radha and Krishna, they went crazy in love of God. Samohita. Moha. They completely forgot everything that was of this world and became merged totally in the internal spiritual world of Radha and Krishna Smaran. This is their teaching for the Seva Sadak Rupena, Sidrupena Chatri. And Siddharupa were supposed to do that, become lost in Smaran. It's in that verse, it's the same verse, I think, Radha, isn't it? Sankhya Puravakanama. So that's their explanation of their Seva Sadaka Rupena. Sadaka Rupa, they did the Seva and their Siddharupa. In Sada group, they were counting the name and counting how many obeisances. Natibi means how many obeisances, how many dandavats were they offering? That means Natibi. Natibi means expressions of humility. Natibi. So it's generally translated as obeisances, dandavats. Sankhya purvaka nama gana, Natibi. Kalavasa nikrito, nidrahara vihara karivijana. Then Radha Krishna Gunasmriti. So the physical expression of their devotional attachment in Rag Marg was by their chanting of Ashtakams, the writing, they wrote them first. They wrote them and chanted them and sang them. And then in their manasik deha, they became absorbed in Smaran, Radha Krishna Gunasmriti. Namrup Gun Leela. So much absorbed, they forgot everything. So this is what happens. If our smaran becomes so deep and so focused and so concentrated, then we'll forget everything. And we'll remember that identity, that manasa chintadeya, antas chintadeya, that mentally desirable, conceived identity that we want to serve Radha and Krishna. So that will become imprinted in our chitta by repetitive meditations with that sankalpa and desire becomes etched in our consciousness like acid. If you pour acid on glass, you can etch the glass. It melts the glass. You can make designs. So the consciousness becomes like that. And there's an example in 11th canto of Bhagavatam. So many examples that the wasp, pesha, kia, kita, laj, naya or something, how the wasp or hornet, he caught one worm, small worm, stuffed him in his hole, and the worm was sitting there in a little hole and always meditating on this wasp, when he's going to eat me. So he's always looking at the form and thinking, this is my predator. And then when he left his body, that impression was in his mind deeply, like a the last snapshot. Like you have a camera. The last snapshot is the main one. Whatever that last, what used to call snapshots, I don't know what you call them now. What do you call them now? Pics, what do you call them? Snapshot. So the last one, and that's the one that counts. And generally, that's the one that you were snapping your whole life. The one you were snapping your whole life is going to be the one to snap you remember at the last time, last moment. So if it's always wife, 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 then you'll think of wife. It's always husband, husband, husband. You'll think of husband. If it's always Krishna, 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 Radha, 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 then that snap will be seen in the consciousness in technicolor. And one will go to that divine position by meditating on a divine form of Radha and Krishna throughout one's life. Then one will attain his own divine form. Man is made in the image of God. Sarup, Sarup Siddhi, the perfect form. Another verse here on this discussion is chapter 185. Says that that title was No Interest in Ishwara Vaikuntha. 185 is Lakshmi can't relish Vrindavan's conjugal mellows, but Radha's dasis can, the sakis. 185. Because it's comparable, the positions of the Lakshmis and Vaikuntha and the gopis of Vrindavan. 185. Alakshya Sri Lakshmiya Apicha Bhagavatya Bhagavata Sada Vakshastaya Madhura Madhura Kecha Rasa Hoya Dashi Bi Satatam Anubhuyant Urubi Pakares Tam Radham Vaja Dayata Vrindavane Vane Vrindavana Vane Radham Vajadayata Vrindavana Vane. Even though Sri Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, eternally resides in the heart of the Lord, Lakshmi is unable to relish the wonderful sweet mellows of the Lord's exalted pastimes. Alas, my dear friend, my dear friend, reside in Vrindavan and simply worship Sri Radha. For even Radha's maidservants are constantly relishing those sweet mellows of Krishna to their full satisfaction. Radham bhaja dayata vrindavane vane. So this is, again, pointing out the relative position of Lakshmi Devi. She's so close to the Lord, she's residing in his heart. It says here, Sada Vakshastaya, she's always resting on his chest, resting in his heart. And she was so impetuous and desirous to enter the rasa dance that she left Vaikuntha to come to Vailvan, do austerities. Krishna happened upon her one day and said, it's impossible for you to enter the rasa dance because you're not anugata, you're not following the gopis. Even the great shrutis, the great personified shrutis who are living with you in Vaikuntha, and they're waking up your husband every morning, and they're chanting so many samavedas, so many prayers to awaken your husband. Even they wanted to become gopis, and they had to follow the gopis and perform rigid austerity for thousands of years. She got the idea of performing rigid austerities and not following the gopis. The sages, they're always meditating on the forms of the gopis, their actual forms, and desiring, intensely desiring, we want to have a gopi form and to serve Krishna in the rasa dance. So he said, I can't, you'll never make it, but I'll tell you what I'll do for you. I'll keep you on my chest as a golden lion. So then Krishna put a golden reka, a golden line on his left side of his chest, represents Lakshmi. And Vishwanath says that when Krishna is in his purport, when Krishna is not with his consorts in Vrindavan, then that golden line takes shape. The golden line comes off his chest and assumes the form of beautiful consort. So exactly what parakosha that is, or what compartment of Vrindavan, it's not told, but obviously it's a special compartment, parakosha. Lila Parakoshta, those compartments. It's like inside the inside, the inside, the inside. There's Radha. No, there's three Radhas. Three Radhas? Yeah, some yogini, vyogini. Acha. Oh, I was worshipping Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna. Which Radha? Huh? I'm worshipping Krishna. Oh, Krishna Bhagavan, Hare Krishna. Are you worshipping Vrindavan Krishna? Or are you worshipping Purna Bhagavan? Or Purnatara? Or Purnatam? I don't know. I thought it was just Radha and Krishna. Are you worshipping Aishwarya Goloka Vrindavan? Or Madhurya Goloka Vrindavan? Are you in Prakrit Lila? Or Prakrit, Aprakrit? Prakriti, Aprakrita? And how it got so confusing. They told me to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And I studied and I studied. And I knew I learned 10 chapters in the book. And then they said, oh, there's a new edition. There's chapter 11 also. Oh, there's chapter 11. And I studied 11 chapters of the book. Then they said, no, now a new edition's come out. That's chapter 12. And then there's 306. There's Radha and Krishna and the Sakis. Oh, that's nice. No, but there's 360 different kinds of Sakis. 360 different kind of Nayakas. 96 like this and 12 in this category and 3 in it. 3 times 3 is 4. That makes 12. That's 96 plus the Astasakis. Oh, all right. It's easier to be an atheist. So it's a challenge. Krishna is always one step ahead of your intelligence. As soon as you think you've discriminated sufficiently and accepted him and understood him, and you're surrendered, then he says, oh yeah, boom. Then he manifests in newer and more variegated ways. He says, oh, Krishna, you nonsense. Why you make it so difficult? I just want to love you. Well, then he says, all right, then be a gopi. Then throw away all your attachments and just be a gopi. Just chant my name day and night. We have so many attachments, so then you have to go through all these things. All this sambandha and avideya and prayojana tattva. There's prayojana tattva. Forget about the prayojana. You have to understand all prayojana tattva and realize that. And then, well, what about the goal? Well, I'm so busy with the tattvas, I never realized the goal. This tattva and that tattva and unlimited tattvas and unlimited depth. And will I ever actually learn to love God? Will I ever actually love God? Express my love for God. This is the question. I'm lost in an ocean of tattvas myself. And I realize the gopis, they know everything because they know how to love Krishna. That's the ultimate thing to know. If you know everything and you don't know how to love Krishna, then you've lost everything but your tattvas. Hang on to your tattvas. So at this point in the game, all you have is some vague understanding of a handful of tattvas. The tattvas are unlimited. And just like you study some puranas, and then you find out there's puranas, you see, actually, there's also upapuranas. Upapuranas. Yeah, don't you know? There's 137 upapuranas. Acha. And you study the Vedas, there's so many Vedas, there's 4 of this and 2 of that, and you say, no, then there's the Aranyas, and then there's the Brahmanas, and each stage in each part of the forest has his own Aranya. If he's living in this part of the forest, he has the Nidhi Aranya. And this, whatever forest he lives in, Aranya means forest, there's the Aranyakas, and they're written by different sages who live in the forest, the realizations of Godhead. We try to read some of these and look at some of these books, and we realize that there's so many things to learn. Bhakti mama vijananti yavanyash tasmi tattvataha. Krishna says, I can only be known by devotion. But we have to study for lifetimes, understand what is devotion. And then we practice that devotion for lifetimes, and we finally learn what is surrender. And then we surrender for lifetimes, and we finally realize, what does it mean to love God? And then we try to love God for so many lifetimes, and then we attain love of God. This is the way I kind of perceive the projection here, based on my previous life's dabbling in devotion. I'm sure there's been many lives in the past. maybe more in the future. We can always, as they say, hope for the best. Cross your fingers and keep chanting. Go, keep going forward, that's the main thing. We want to finish our business in one life, and all sages and sadhus will encourage us to do the same. And everyone should endeavor in such a way that everything is finished. But it's easier said than done, because the extent of our prarabdha karma, which is still haunting us, all the way, even in the fragrance of our prarabdha sticks with us to the prema. It's a very sticky thing. This prarabdha karma is very sticky. It's hard to get, it's like getting bitten by a cobra. You can't throw them off your ankle. I know one lady in the village, my friend's wife, she was bitten by a cobra when she was picking firewood, and she kicked it and it flew off her leg. It's a natural response. And then the cobra immediately came back like lightning, zoom, and bit her again. She kicked it and went off again. And it came back again, zoom, right back and bit her leg. And this time he held on, so she was shaking her leg, and the snake says, "I'm not letting go. I'm come here as the time factor." Kalasarv. And she's shaking her leg, and why was she shaking her leg? She died. She just, within 1 minute or so. And when we found her, and Cobra was, went about his business. And then the whole sad story of three children under 5 years old or whatever, 6 years old. This is the tragedy of this world. Huh? So we're reading another verse here, 185. When we heard this translation, let's hear another translation. Vrindavan. I guess if we hear Vrindavan glories enough, then we may start to appreciate Vrindavan. This is another translation of 185. Alakshya Sri Lakshmiya Apicha Bhagavatya Bhagavata. Even glorious Lakshmi Devi, who rests on Lord Narayan's chest, Sada Vakshastai, Madhura Kechana Rasa. She cannot taste the supremely sweet nectar that Radha's maidservants always taste in various ways. Aho yadashibi satatam anubhuyanta urubi. O dear friend, please worship Radha in Vrindavan forest. Tam Radha bhaja dayata Vrindavanavane. Basically similar translation. So the idea here is to not to understand the actual sweetness of Radha and Krishna, because generally when one approaches God, they approach God from the grand aspect, Lakshmi Narayan. Temples of Lakshmi Narayan are so prevalent in India, in the worship of Lord Narayan, and everyone knows about Lakshmi Devi, very popular goddess. Durga, Lakshmi, and Saraswati. Radha is not very much known. Mysterious goddess Radha. But we see from these books like Vrindavan Mahimamrita how glorious is the position of Radha. Even Lakshmi is hankering to be Radha-like. But she has some ego, some abhiman of being Lakshmi. And she's a Brahmani, born from the ocean, and she thinks, how can I make cow dung patties, and how can I milk cows, and all these things. So this is a nice reminder. Just worship Radha in the forest of Vrindavan. Even Lakshmi Devi, it's amazing. She's a goddess, she's the queen of Vaikuntha, God's consort, the creator's consort. And she doesn't have the access or the eligibility to taste the sweet nectar that the simple maidservants, the Nitya Sakis, Pran Sakis, The maidservants of Radharani are tasting greater happiness and joy than even Lakshmi Devi, who is such an exalted. Generally, the position of being a Rani or a queen is desirable. It's the topmost position. Of being a kinkar, a kinkari, a servant is not considered the topmost or an exalted position. But in the kingdom of love, in Madhurya Vrindavan, even the simple maidservants are tasting the wonderful nectar in their service to Radharani. Madhura, madhura kechana rasa, aho yad dashibi satatam anubhuyanta urubi. So Lakshmi, she's really unfortunate, and for some reason or other, Vrindavan Mahamamrita, Prabhunananda Saraswati, wants to repeatedly remind us of, because it's interesting, because if you read all through the Vedas, oftentimes they're glorifying Narayan and Lakshmi and Vishnu, and that this worship of Radha and Krishna is extremely esoteric and secret. It's become most evident and prominently understood in the last 1,000 or so years with Nimbarkacharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They've uncovered the secrets of the Vedas and brought out these hitherto not so much revealed scriptures, Brahma Samhita, Snat Kamara Samhita, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. They have, from these Shastras, their own Mahaprabhu's followers, and from the Bhagavatam, they've expanded a whole entire philosophy to explain the unique position and worship of Radha and Krishna. They brought out the secret. They revealed the hidden secret of the Vedas. The word Radha and Madhav is mentioned in the Rig Veda. There's one verse about Radha Madhav in the Rig Veda. I believe it's there in that Shlokamrita book. But otherwise, it's very hard to find the name of Radha anywhere, except in some Puranas, of course. But the ancient Shrutis and Smritis you won't find. So he wants to make it a point. Listen, everyone, our Radha is something extraordinary. And her service is so extraordinary. There's many verses. I have many verses here collected. This is 1194. Brahma prays for Rasa Deya in Vrindavan. He wants to have a body where he can serve in the Rasa Leela. This is 1194. Back to the 11th chapter. Brahma. This is Suvimala, Suvimala Madhura Hari Ras, Porna Nava Vapur Vidir Vrinute. Vrindavana Bhuvi Bandhya Sadguna Brinda Hi Ye KP. Lord Brahma has prayed for a pure, eternal, transcendental body filled with love of God. Hari Rasa Porna Nava Vapur Vidir. Vidhi is Brahma, I believe. But anyone who has taken shelter of Vrindavan is endowed with all good qualities. Vrindavana Bhuvi Vandya, Sadguna Brinda. Brinda, of course, in this case means the group of. Gora Bhakta Vrinda, right? So Brinda means, Brinda Sadguna means all whole collection of good qualities. And Sadguna means also spiritual qualities, which ultimately means Sadguna Brinda. What is Sadguna? Sadguna means the Ekadash Bhav. These are the 11 qualities, the Sadgun. The Sadguna means the eternal qualities of the... It says here, Navavapur, Hari Rasa Navavapur. Vapur, of course, means body. Nava means a Navasaki, or a new, a spiritual body, which is full of Hari Ras, Hari Rasa Purna. Navavid Vapur. Sadguna Brinda. So this Vrindavan Bhuvi Vandya, like Vande Hum. By worshipping the land of Vrindavan, one will also attain such all these qualities. Sadguna Brinda. He will get what Brahma is praying for. Brahma is praying for this, according to this translation. Suvimala Samudu Madhura Harirasa. He prayed for a eternal, pure, transcendental body filled with love of God. But, so Brahma, on one side, Brahma's praying for it. So this, we're trying to show the comparison of comparable position of Vrindavan and the gopis and Lakshmi and Vrindavan and Vaikuntha and Vrindavan and even the demigods, Brahma. So this is the power of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is guru. I remember once I met one professor and he wrote, Professor David Haverman, I met him once in the Shodastan, the Vrindavan Research Institute. I was staying there for 6 or 8 months. They gave me a room there, the director. And he came and he said, I saw this book, Appreciating Vrindavan, and I heard that you knew Sanskrit and Hindi. I wanted to meet you. I said, I don't know any Sanskrit or Hindi. I just collected some quotes here. And he said, because he himself is quite a learned person, Professor David Haverman from America. He's written some books about Krishna. He translated the Nectar Devotion into English also, verse by verse. You can see that book is there. Rasa Vihari. And I met him and he said he keeps a room at Radha Raman Temple. And I said, you have guru? You have a guru? Or? He said, no, I'm coming to Vrindavan. He's a very old person coming to Vrindavan since a long time, in the 70s maybe, early 70s possibly. And for me, Vrindavan is my guru. He said, I have a Govardhan Shila. I worship a Govardhan Shila. But Vrindavan is my guru. I don't have any guru. I said, all right, can't argue that. He said, any questions I've had, Vrindavan has asked. Any inspiration I've needed, Vrindavan has given. Of course, he has Giriraj also. And he must have some good friends at the Radha Raman temple because he's right inside the complex. He has a room in there. He did at that time, 91 or so it was. So here's someone that's just coming to Vrindavan and he's getting just the Vrindavan itself. So this verse is saying, if you live in Vrindavan, what does it say here? This is 185. What is it? 180. Excuse me, 1185? Yeah, 94. Okay, so let's look at another translation and see which way that takes us. Because it's kind of like, you know, on an ocean, and the waves can take you in different directions. Once you enter the ocean, you don't have any control where the waves are going to take you. Sometimes they have an undertow, and they pull you out, they grab you, and take you out, and you may not come back. It happens. I almost didn't come back myself in Puri. The demigod Brahma prayed to be born in Vrindavan in a new body filled with the nectar of love for splendid and charming Lord Hari. Whoever resides in Vrindavan is worshipable and filled with transcendental good qualities. Yeah, Vandya. Vrindavan, Bhuvi, means Vrindavan, Brajbhumi. Vandya, worshipful. Sadguna, Brinda. He has all transcendental. Sad means sat, transcendental qualities. Basically, it's the same translation. I'd rather like my adjusted one. That if you live in Vrindavan, you can realize you're Siddhadeya. This is the ultimate Sadguna Brinda. Brinda means a collection. So Ekadash Bhav means a collection of 11 qualities of the Siddhadeya. Nam, complexion, invasion, particular mood and Parakashta, and your Yuteshri, your age, and your Seva, Nitya Seva, and your Seva Kunj. These are the ultimate eternal qualities of each individual jiva. 11 symptoms or qualities of his spiritual form. And Brahma is praying for that. He's praying. Here it says he's praying for a pure, eternal, transcendental body. And here it says he wants the same thing. He's praying to be born in Vrindavan in a new body. Well, new body, it says Navavapur, Purna, Hari Rasa Purna, Navavapur. So, of course, it means a new body. It ultimately means a spiritual body. Filled with the nectar of love for splendid, charming Lord Hari. So Subimala Su Madura Hari, Madura, that most sweet Hari. And Hari in this case, of course, means Krishna, not Vishnu. Hari Rasapurna. So Anava Vapur is not simply a new body, it's a rasa-filled body. It says here, it says Rasapurna Navavapur. So the Rasapurna refers to the Navavapur. The spiritual body is full of ras. This is the whole idea of coming to bhav and bhava bhakti. And then we experience the taste of ras, combination of different rasas, and prema becomes so much more profound experience, even spurti or sakshat darshan. So the Navavapur, the spiritual new body that one finally attains of a Navasakhi, is obviously full of rasapurna. It's completely full of rasas. It's the Prem, the Sarup, Sarup Siddhi, Sarup Siddhi. The spiritual body is full of rasapurna. So Brahma is praying for to attain a rasa-filled spiritual body in Vrindavan. And we've taken shelter. So anyone who's taken shelter here, they will also ultimately attain their spiritual body by the arrangement of the Lord directly through Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Chaitya Guru, Parishad. There's different ways the revelation can come. Some may say one way is standard or another way is standard. But the mercy of the Lord, it never follows any particular standard. It's causeless. It's called causeless. Causeless means there's nothing you can do to make it happen, but you try. What does causeless mean? It means there's nothing we can do to make it happen. And if Krishna wants to bestow mercy, he's free. He's an autocrat. He can bestow mercy anywhere. When we try to position ourselves, we've seen others that have received the mercy of the Lord, and there are the exceptional cases that didn't really do anything, or any sadhana, bhajan. But generally we find that everyone does something to somehow attract the attention of the Lord. So better we follow those examples of sadhakas that endeavored with great intensity, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They are our role models. Shri Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath, Shri Jeev Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath, Sad Goswamis. We are to follow them, we are to study their teachings and pray for their mercy, and they themselves can reveal themselves. As Prabhupada told once, the Rupa Goswami appeared to him in his rooms, his kitchen at Radha Damodar, and blessed him with confidence and success in his future mission to spread Krishna consciousness. Swamiji, you go and preach the teachings of the Goswamis and Mahaprabhu. We'll be right behind you. You'll be all successful. So Prabhupada came there. He went to Vamsi Gopal Temple in this Gokulananda Gera area. And then finally he moved. He thought, what a great invitation. And Jiva Goswami has invited me to do bhajan next to him. And Rupa Goswami has invited me to do bhajan right behind him. Look here. Listen, Bhaktivedanta Swami, my Jiva Goswami is sitting here on one side. Now you sit over here. So Jiva Goswami was on one side of Rupa Manjari, Rupa Goswami serving, and Prabhupada was on the other side serving and praying and spending so many nights out there in front of the samadhi, crying on Ekadasi night, Purnima night, Rasa Purnima, Prabhupada sitting there. And Vidyananda Das Babaji, who was staying in the room upstairs at the time, he heard some sadhu crying his heart out, "Oh, Rupa Goswami, Kripa Karo, Rupa Goswami, Oh, Rupa Goswami Pad." And who is this crying? So he looked over the roof and he saw there was this elderly Bengali gentleman, Bhaktivedanta Swami, during his Nirjan Bhajan stage of life in the Radha Damodara temple. When we stayed there for 3 years in those rooms, 1989-1992, We knew about that. We knew that person also. He was living at Radha Shyamasundar Mandir, and he was pujari there. He introduced this very wonderful way of painting the deities' faces, which later was taken up by Radha Damodar, and also dressing Shyamasundar in a very like taking a dhoti. They would buy dhotis from the market, a white dhoti, and with lines on it. They would fold it in such an attractive way and very tightly around Radha Shyama. If you ever notice, they have a very interesting style. This is in Vrindavan, in Sevakund, Radha Shyamasundar. So he was very expert in this Sringhar. Then later he moved, and now he's settled up in Radha Damodar temple again. So he was a witness of Prabhupada's crying for the mercy in the courtyard. So I used to go there also. He told me, I used to sit there in front of Rupa Goswami's samadhi, but I can't cry. I would just simply pray and chant. But it's a great place to go and cry. Many great sadhus have gone there. And even I've heard lectures from others, other missions, given there, where they say this is such a powerful place, the samadhi of Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami. And many great saints and Brahmins have gone there and prayed and done Purushcharan and chanted so many astakams and lakhs of Gopal Mantra right in front. Even when I was staying there for 3 years, many Brahmins, Goswamis would come there that were aspiring pracharaks of Saptaha pracharaks, and they would go there every day for hours. And I asked Mahanta, I said, what are they doing? He said, this is part of their Purushcharan or something. They're chanting so many lakhs of mantras here because they heard from so-and-so that he attained siddhi by doing this, and they want to do this. And it's a very mystical place, Vrindavan. Many, many amazing places. So we'll read another verse. I think there's time for another verse. Brahma, Shiva, and the demigods, they can't give what Vrindavan can give. That's a nice title. Brahma, Shiva, and demigods, they can't give. So the next question is, what does Vrindavan give? I'm here. Where is it? I want it. So this is text 1265. If you wish to... I should read the Sanskrit here. Or let's say try. Vibrate it. Become purified by worshipping it. The Sanskrit. This is 1265. Yadyaptam ichasi mahaparamam pumartam naivaptam ichasi parishramam alpakam cha Vrindavanam jat iti tat priya yahi ma yahi lambita bahyan hi vidisha mukyan. If you desire to achieve the ultimate goal of life and at the same time do not want to work hard for it. Now that sounds like an interesting opener here for this salesman. It's really whetted my appetite here. Are you interested to achieve the ultimate goal of life? Yes. And you don't want to work very hard for it, right? Yes. Then I've got something for you. Then, dear friend, quickly go to Vrindavan. Don't bother. Don't waste your time to go to personalities like Brahma or Shiva. Forget it. For they themselves are fearful and bestowers of insignificant fruits. That's quite a wonderful translation. I hardly want to read any other one, but let's see what the other one says here. If you wish to attain the supreme goal of life and you do not wish to suffer the slightest pain to get it, then, dear friend, go at once to Vrindavan, says here. Go. Do not go to Brahma, Shiva, and other frightened demigods. It's a fact, they get frightened. When Vrikasura was chasing Shiva, he wasn't too happy. Because Vrikasura was going to give him a split personality. And Durga wouldn't have appreciated two halves of her husband. So Gopal Krishna intervened and saved the day, as usual. And Brahma, he gets himself in lots of trouble, giving benedictions to Aranyakashipu and other interesting characters. And then, what to speak of, stealing calves and boys, and he does a lot of mistakes. And so he has to get reprimanded by the Lord. Says that, it's interesting, that there's this debate sometimes in scholars, they say, Krishna's more favorable to whom, Shiva or Brahma? And then the answer they give is Krishna is more favorable to Shiva. Because if you read throughout, say, based on Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, if you read the pastimes of Brahma getting in trouble and goofing up, and then Krishna is not very happy with Brahma. And he's so unhappy with him that when Brahma comes and offers prayers and Brahma Stuti in chapter 14, Krishna doesn't even look at him. Doesn't speak to him, doesn't even, he said, he listens patiently. Okay, very good, nice, bye. And doesn't pay any attention to Brahma. And earlier in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, and Hiranyakashipu got benedicted by Brahma, then Shingadev, of course, vanquished him, and Brahma was so frightened, and Shingadev didn't pay any attention to him at all. And every pastime where Krishna's dealing with Shiva, in the 10th canto, there's lots of them. There's one where Krishna has to fight Banasura, and Shiva comes out to fight on Banasura's terms. So then Krishna reciprocates with him, and he speaks to him. He's, all right, listen, Banasura is your devotee. I cut off all his arms. He had 1,000 arms. I cut off 996. I'm going to leave 4 arms because that's his sarup. And so does Shiva Loka. He'll be your eternal servant, so he'll have a forearm, spiritual form. So that's there in the Krishna book. That Banasura, he cut off all his arms, he left him with 4. Because Shiva said, oh, my Lord, please be kind to my Banasura, he's my bhakt. He's all right. I left him 4 arms. This is his sarup. I killed his demoniac form and that attacked my grandson, Aniruddha. So there's some dialogue, and he forgives him, and he's happy with him. Then Vrikasura, then again he was afraid. She was running from Vrikasura, and then Krishna came to save him and said to him, "said you should be careful who you give boons to." Krishna is always very friendly and kind to Bam Bam Bole, to Shiva, but to Indra and Brahma, especially Brahma, he was like, nonsense. You know, he didn't pay him any attention. So this discussion is also there. I think it's in Vishnu's purport too also. So Brahma is in his own transcendental fanaticism, Prabhupada Saraswati is saying, don't bother, don't waste your time, don't go to Brahma, Shiva. How many people go to Shiva and Brahma? So many people go to Shiva. They themselves, they're fearful. They were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. All the demigods were so afraid, including Brahma, everyone. They didn't know what to do. Even Lakshmi didn't know what to do. And so then they become fearful. So don't waste time with them. If you want the ultimate goal of life, then go to Vrindavan. You don't want to work hard for it. Both translations agree because it says, Ichasi maha paramam pumartam. That's pretty easy Sanskrit. Ichasi, that's your icha, the mahaparamam, the highest transcendental form of desirable object for the human being. Pumartam, prema purusharta. Then, aptam ichasi parishramam alpakam cha. See, parishramam, you know, you want it, but you want that, but you want alpa. You don't want any, want very little difficulty, parishram. Parishrama means difficulty, fatigue. I don't want to get too tired. I don't want to get sweated up about it. But I want it easily. Alpa. Alpa means alpha made it very little. Then, what should you do? Brindavanam jatiti tat priya yahi yahi. You should go there and you'll get that dear thing that you want. Then lambita bhayan, you'll attain it. You'll attain what you want, that dear thing that you want. Priyaji's lotus feet, Priyaji's charan seva, you'll attain from Vrindavan. There's one catch. It's easy. It says you want the highest ultimate goal of life and you don't want to work hard for it. Yes? I have any takers out there and listening to this? You want the highest, topmost goal of life, Krishna Prem, and you don't want to work hard for it? Well, come on down to Vrindavan. Come on down to Vrindavan and spend your holidays here and spend your everydays here and stay in Vrindavan. Oh, then what happens to our temples? That you can figure out. Move your temple to Vrindavan. And some people do that. But we're just going with the thread of the discussion. We're not trying to create volcanic revolutions. But the dear author, Prabhupada Saraswati, is trying to show the glories of the gopis, the glories of Vrindavan, and compare them with the demigods and with Lakshmi and Vaikuntha, because they're the topmost personalities in this world, the demigods. And then the topmost spiritual abode is Vaikuntha. Everyone says, Vaikuntha Prapti. Where's your father? Oh, Vaikuntha Prapti. When someone dies, they always say Vaikuntha Prapti, at least here in Vrindavan. Oh, my Golok Prapti, Vaikuntha Prapti, Golok Prapti. I don't know what they say in Bombay. They say he's dead, or what do they say? Swargavas. So they have a different idea of perfection. Outside of Vrindavan, when someone, old man dies, a grandfather, father, whatever, say, oh, my father, I say, how's your father? Oh, he passed away. He's Swargavas. He's living in Swarga. He's Swargavas. He's gone to live in the heavenly planets. He's gone to heaven to dance around with Indra and his friends. But in Vrindavan, when somebody leaves their body, then they say, oh, where's your father? Oh, Golok Prapti. Everyone says, Bangi, Brahman, Riksha, anyone, they say, Golok Prapti. I say, wow, it seems like a cinch, you know, you just live around here in Vrindavan like an ordinary person, and Golok Prapti. No japa, no classes, no anything that we do. But somehow that's their good fortune, that they can just pass their days here. But the catch is, we have to live in Vrindavan without offending the very personality that's giving all, the very personality, Brindatavi, or Brindadevi, or Vrindavan, the mother of this forest, the Vrindavan. This Vrindavan is Krishna. Vrindavan is Radha. The terra firma of Vrindavan is Krishna. And to remind us, he sprinkles his footprints all over the place, and Radharani and the Sakhi's footprints are sprinkled all over the place. Is the foot any different than the body? The foot is part of your body. So Krishna's footprints and Radha's footprints are scattered around the earth of Vrindavan to remind everybody, this Vrindavan is me. This is not my footprint in the land of Vrindavan. This footprint is to show you that this Vrindavan is me. People think, oh, this is a Charan Pahari. Charan Pahari. This is Krishna's footprint in a rock in Kamyavan, or in outside of Nandagram, which maybe that's also Kamyavan at that port, by Brindakund. So people say, oh, this is Krishna's footprint. No, the land of Krishna is Krishna's body. And this footprint is to remind us and to remind us of that fact, that this whole, not only is this his footprint, but every part, his signature is everywhere, his body is everywhere. So the catch about living in Vrindavan and getting the blessings of Vrindavan, which means the blessings of Radha and Krishna, perfection easily attained, siddhadeya easily realized, prema easily acquired, darshan easily seen, is not to offend Vrindavan or anyone in Vrindavan or anyone visiting Vrindavan. Bas, three-way offenses. So Vrindavan means everything and anything in Vrindavan. That's the hard part. Because we are like abodes of offenses, and Vrindavan is the abode of love. We are reservoirs of envy, and Vrindavan is a reservoir of love. We are abodes of offenses, and Vrindavan is a reservoir of forgiveness. And we are abodes of envy, and Vrindavan is an abode of love. So there's kind of a contrast. But if we can somehow keep trying to live in such a transparent, non-offensive way. That's why they say it's not so good to live in Vrindavan as a neophyte. The general description of Vrindavan amongst the Sadhu Samaj and Gaudiya Raja Sabha, Vaishnava Raja Sabha, Gaudiya Vaishnava Raja Sabha, is that Vrindavan is Siddhastali. It is a sthan, it is a place for siddhas to relish. And Navadvip is the Vrindavan to live in. It's called Sadhana Bhumi, Navadvip. So somehow if one finds himself in Vrindavan by the mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga, Nitai, of course, Nityananda, then he must, unless he's siddha, which is not so many those siddhas, then he must have a tight connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that way the audarya kripa of Navadvipa will be showering on his head because he's always connected with the audarya dham, audarya nam, rup, gun and lila of Mahaprabhu, and his parikaras and his pastimes in Vrindavan. And that's why you find most Gaudiya Vaishnavas living in Vrindavan, they regularly give classes on Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal, maybe occasionally. And they do so much Gaur Bhajan, even they worship Gauranga, Gaur Nitai, Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan, because it's so much important to quickly purify the heart. And we see that this is the special quality of Jagai and Madhai. Inconceivable, but true. They did every sin but offending Vaishnavas, which is also a sin. And we offend Vaishnavas. We don't do any obvious sins, but we offend Vaishnavas. It's a very interesting comparison. In Jagai and Madhai, they engage in every possible sin, as you know, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that whole chapter describing their liberation, how Yamraj came down to witness the whole thing and went back in his chariot and fell unconscious when Chitragupta was telling that, well, the scribes have broken their hands and they can't, the Shravanis, there's 20 Shravanas and Shravanis that listen, that they report to Chitragupta everything, all sounds that you make, any kind of sound you make. The ultimate witness is sound. Shravani. Because your heart is moving, it's making a sound. So that sound is your karma. Lub dub. Because you're only in the body because of karma. The soul doesn't have a heart that goes lub dub. Soul is silent. So as long as that heart is beating, then there's sound. And so wherever you are, your heart is. And you may be whispering something or making some unintelligible sounds. A scream, a cry, a whimper, a whine, a sigh, breathing. So that's how we get caught. We get recorded. Everything is recorded by the Shravanis and Shravanas. There's male and female servants of Chitragupta, Yamaraj, the reporting, everything is, here's today's report, Yamaraj, 6 o'clock news report from the Jivas. Oh my God, it's been an amazing day down there. He tunes into the news show and the Shravanis come back every day and tell him the news about the Jivas. So this Jagai Madhai, they had so many record books, it was just like one of these Indian government offices with all these record books piled to the ceiling, and mice have eaten all the corners, and that somehow they're able to find your records from 20 years ago. They can find something in there. It's amazing. I've been in these offices in Delhi. I was applying for citizenship. Unbelievable, stacked to the ceiling, all crooked and hanging this way, that way. If you sneeze, all come toppling down. That's amazing. So they threw everything away because they didn't offend Vaishnavas. They got the mercy of the Lord. Nitai. Nitai is the champion. He's the Lord of the Vaishnavas. He champions the cause of the devotees. So that he doesn't... Offenses to devotees don't sit well with Nitai. They don't sit very well. He doesn't like... And Balaram also, he has his club ever ready to smash Aparadis. And they get smashed. You see, when oftentimes when you live in Vrindavan, if you make some offense in your mind, you'll stub your toe.
It's countered.
Yeah. What did you say?
It's countered in the mind in Vrindavan.
Yeah. He's saying offenses in the mind are counted in Vrindavan. That's interesting because we heard there's some reprieve. And generally in Kali Yuga, one is not responsible for the wayward, crazy minds. But in Vrindavan, I don't know the reference. Maybe you've heard it. I don't know. But there's many things like this. Yeah, acharyas will say these things from their understanding or their realizations. That in Vrindavan, everything is special in Vrindavan. That's one thing we have to accept and understand the achintya shakti of all that, of the Dham itself. And then accepting that, then all the amazing things that go with that. Once you accept the inconceivability and the spiritual position of the Dham, because without accepting that, then you're not in the Dham. If you don't accept that Vrindavan is a spiritual place and it's the Dham, the holy abode of the Lord, then you're not here at all. You're nowhere. But once that's accepted and believed to a good extent, then when we hear things like, well, in Vrindavan you're responsible for your thoughts. So if you think offensively, you're getting a reaction, you'll get the reaction for an offense. Stub your toe, hit your head, you know, you'll go somewhere in a narrow path. And of course now there's no narrow paths in Govardhan. It used to be in Govardhan the inside path is quite narrow and you have to bend down and go like this through different sticker bushes and mend your way through. And you get scratched in the forehead or something by a sticker bush. And I was told numerous times, as living in Vrindavan and Sevakunj with all the older type of Vaishnavas and Brijvasis, if you hit your head somewhere, that means that you have bad desires. You're thinking bad desires, some sinful desire, thinking, contemplating. And if you hit your foot, it's because you make you made offense. Stub your toe, cut your toe, this, that. You offended some devotee, and then you have to think deeply, because then you may realize at that time. You just go, oh, well, I must have offended someone. Who was it? And then you start trying to recollect. And if you're fortunate, you may recall, and if you're not, then either way, you have to repent and pray the Lord to forgive you, and pray to the Dham to forgive you, and roll in the dust of the Dham. Submit yourself before the Dham. Submit yourself to the Dham and say, oh, Vrindavan Dham, I'm an offender to you. So you taught me this lesson. This rock rose out of the... I'm so many times walking on this footpath, and one day this rock rose out of the ground and met my foot. Boom! Oh! And maybe it just bruises you severely, so you remember it throughout the parikrama. Or even is more favorable, cuts you. They say if you get cut in Vrindavan, then your sins are coming out. On Parikrama, this is what I heard. If you're on Parikrama and you cut your foot, then your sins are coming out. So, of course, to find the praman for these things that we're discussing, again, it comes under this inconceivability factor that Vrindavan is the Lord's abode, and there's so many interesting things here. Like we heard, we told that story about one sadhu who said in Vrindavan dreams, Dreams are reality, and outside of Vrindavan, reality is a dream. Generally, everywhere, a dream is considered an illusion, manufactured in the subconscious based on different inputs. You see some gold and you see a mountain, and then you're looking at some magazine on the airplane, and there's some advertisement for gold or something like that, just that. And then you're looking out the window and you're seeing the Alps, Swiss Alps, and you fall asleep. Then you dream of a mountain of gold. You put the two objects together. Because in the dreamland, you can combine things from the present, the past, all kinds of amazing manufacturing there. So in Vrindavan, dreams are reality. So there's something extraordinary about Vrindavan Dham. Oh, that's interesting.
The place is such that one was taking shelter seriously. Then he's not in the Kali Yuga. He's not acting on
it. So then he has to be careful, or anyone
has to be careful. One has to be careful, especially in the Dhamma. Full force is not there, so the subdued aspect.
Angels, they're not, where was it? Fools rush. Fools rushing, or angels dare not. Well, there's another statement in Mathura Mahatmyam which gives up some solace to those poor souls in Vrindavan. And that statement is that sins committed in Vrindavan can only be forgiven by Vrindavan. So if one inadvertently, due to a wayward mind or uncontrolled mind, wrong contemplation, engages in some miscalculation and misdeed, then while living in Vrindavan, then his only recourse is to continue to live in Vrindavan in a proper way and to pray for forgiveness and to be repentive and pray to Vrindatavi and to Guru Garanga and carry on. Because when a devotee is mad, then he takes full shelter of Vrindavan. And he says, Krishna, I can't leave Vrindavan. And so I am a ward of the state. I'm a slave of Vrindavan. I'm enlisted in your, so you have to purify me, uplift me, and keep me. So it's so nice and comforting when you read this Vrindavan Mahimamrita, where he says, Vrindavan is like a mother. Vrindatavi Mata, we read that one phrase, Vrindatavi Mata. Vrindatavi, the forest of Vrindavan is like a mother. And the mother produces the children. And then she produces the children, and then she takes responsibility for them, and she nourishes and protects them. So to live in Vrindavan means that Vrindavan has produced you. The mother of Vrindavan has produced you. That's why we've appeared here. We have appeared in Vrindavan. So the mother of Vrindavan has given us birth. She's allowed us to appear here by whatever means or ways. But ultimately, the mother gives the birth, which means the appearance. She arranges for the appearance. So Mother Vrindavan has arranged for us to appear here in her land of Vrindavan. And she must nourish us. And she must feed us. And she must lift us when we're down and protect us. Because we only have one mother. So you count on your mother to do everything. She gives birth. She raises you, she nourishes you, she protects you, she corrects you, she uplifts you, she comforts you, provides for you, teaches you. So Vrindavan is not anything less than that. As Prabhupada Saraswati said, Vrindavan is like a mother. And one that lives in Vrindavan can never understand how a devotee can live anywhere else for Vrindavan. How is it possible? Your lover lives in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is your lover, and your lover is Vrindavan. And the goal of your life is to love Krishna and Vrindavan. Well, where's the question of living? The only question of living elsewhere is if you don't have the facility or arrangement to live in Vrindavan. But I saw in my own group of friends that every single friend I had, married or unmarried, they all had the facility and ability to live in Vrindavan. Krishna had arranged that for them, but they weren't sufficiently advanced. They weren't sufficiently attached to Krishna and Vrindavan. So they maintain their place outside of Vrindavan. It's not, you can't say it's Prabhu Datta Desh. Prabhu Datta Desh means the Desh, the place that's appointed by my Guru Prabhu. My Prabhu. My Prabhu is my Guru. And he's representing Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya, and Krishna Prabhu, the Supreme Master. So Prabhu Datta Desh means a place given by Guru. So Guru might say, you stay here and maintain this temple in Delhi. But some gurus say their desh is Vrindavan. Prabhu Datta Desh. So the guru says, I'm giving you Vrindavan. Prabhupada gave us Vrindavan. He says, this is my home, come live with me. At the end, when Prabhupada was leaving his body, he said, I want all my disciples. He told the GBC, announced to all my disciples, I want them to come to Vrindavan and stay with me. And see me now, and be with me. But there was some, anyway, didn't happen. Somehow or other, not all the disciples were able to have that fortune. Actually, very few. But Prabhupada's idea was, come stay with me in Vrindavan as I'm leaving the body, and eventually follow me, stay in Vrindavan. Home, our father, the children live with the father, and the father lives in Vrindavan. So we can pray for those that have not understood this. This is the Prabhu Datta Desh. This is the place given by the Prabhu. If someone is engaged full time in a service of a temple somewhere, then that's their Prabhu Datta Desh. That's the delegated appointed place that the Krishna Prabhu, the Supreme Master Krishna, he's engaged. It's not that when you work in a factory, the owner of the factory has to come down to the line and tell you what to do. There are many downline representatives of the owner of the factory that give you your daily orders and commands and engage you. But it's all coming from the top down. So the supreme master that's dictating everything is Krishna for his devotees. But the immediate taskmaster is the guru, Sri Guru. He's the Prabhu that's representing the Supreme Prabhu. He's the important, like you may never even meet the owner of the factory, but you know that Birla owns this steel plant. And you ask somebody working there, did you ever see Birla? No, but I know he owns the place. I'm getting my paycheck. So the same thing, that the Prabhu, the one who gives us our place of seva is the Guru. He says, stay here and serve. Well, Prabhupada gave us this place to serve. So we're serving, and Prabhupada gave other places to other devotees to serve. I know God brothers have been serving as temple presidents for 30 years, 40 years. That was their service given by Prabhupada. That's their Prabhupada Datta Desh. That's their perfection. Krishna wants them there. And Prabhupada wants them there. Prabhupada wrote a letter, he had 5,000 disciples, I want 500 devotees to live permanently in India. I want 500 of my disciples, and at that time they were all Westerners. There was no Easterners, no Indians. I want 500 disciples, that's one-tenth of his disciples, to live in India and preach. So that's one-tenth of the population of ISKCON, 500%. 500. So we said, oh, I want to be one of those 500. Fortune 500. The 500 richest people in the world. No, but so that, because I wasn't given any particular Prabhu Datta Desh. after Prabhupada, I had one Prabhupada at the Desh, and then it expanded to become Vrindavan. So we'll end there. Vrindavan Mahimamrita Ki Jai. If you know all these things, how do you manage to stay in Vrindavan? If you know that just by bad thoughts you get in trouble.
Because I get the reaction.